This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Curly Neal joins us on Sports Byline, the legendary former Harlem Globetrotter. 22 seasons as a member of the Harlem Globetrotters, played in over 6,000 games in over 97 countries, and traveled well over a million miles. And he received one of the highest honors the Globies can give anybody, as he has been inducted into the Globetrotters Legends Ring, and also as a member of the Basketball Naismith Hall of Fame, as he was inducted along with the rest of the Globetrotters in 2002. Curly, it's been a while since you and I talked, and I'm sure at some particular point you've had a chance to reflect back not only on your basketball career, but that portion which was spent with the Globetrotters. When you think back about that time with the Globies, what is it that comes to your mind?
Well, it was a family affair. You know, we were children-orientated, and we took the basketball around the world to matter of fact, I went to 95 countries. You know, I had a chance to spread joy and amongst the troops, you know, in Germany and France, England, and all over the place. And I just enjoy being a part of it, and I like to wish them the best, you know, because they're superheroes, and our prayers are with them.
How did your path lead you to the Harlem Globetrotters rather than in another direction?
Well, I got drafted by five professional teams when I came out of a small college at Johnson C. Smith in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I got drafted by the New York Knicks, the Detroit Pistons, the Baltimore Bullets, the Atlanta Hawks, and the fabulous Globetrotters. But Abe Saperstein sent me a wonderful letter. You know, he had scouted me during my college career and invited me to come to the Globetrotter camp. And I came to the camp in Chicago, where it was 125 guys trying out for five positions, and I was happened to be in the lucky five.
It's very interesting, Curly, because, as you know, most people have the dream of making it to a professional sports league, but yet that was something that you forsook, you know, gave up in order to be able to go to the Harlem Globetrotters. Why?
Oh, well, just a family affair. You know, I enjoy playing basketball. I wanted to be a professional athlete. Matter of fact, baseball was my first love when I started out, Ron. But got to playing with the Globetrotters, and we were international, and we brought peace and joy and happiness amongst countries that the NBA had never, you know, been there before. So we opened doors for all those guys that's making these big salaries, and we were pioneers, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s. So we opened doors for the NBA players, and now they're over there playing and doing a great job.
The Globetrotters, of course, have a legendary history. When you joined them in 1963, what was the team like at that time?
Well, we had one of the best teams of talent, you know, because there wasn't that many players in the NBA at that particular time. And we could go against anybody as far as basketball talent, you know, but we mixed our talent with entertainment and perform for people throughout the world. And we did a lot for children. We would always go into the YMCAs, the Boys and Girls Club, and do great things for the Special Olympics. And that made me feel a part of the world, and it's just a part of me now. I just believe in giving back.
Who were some of the other players that were on the team at that time, Curly?
The great Meadowlark Lemon,
right.
Marcus Haynes, Wilt Chamberlain also played with us, Geese Osby, Connie Hawkins, Bobby Joe Mason. Matter of fact, Sweetwater Clifton was one of the first blacks to go from the Globetrotters to the NBA. So we had a great array of talent, and nobody could really match our skills at that particular time in the 60s and the 70s.
I got to tell you, a great array of talent is an understatement. I mean, as you listed off those names, I thought to myself, my goodness, that's an all-star lineup of talent. How did you guys blend all your talents together to play the game, and was it hard to do both basketball and entertainment at that time since you all were so talented?
No, it wasn't. You know, being a basketball player first, you know, and then we, you know, I practiced a lot, you know, tried to be the best that I could be, tried to learn from Meadowlark and some of the older players, the antics of the Globetrotters, and we just blended in with sports and basketball, and it took me 22 years, you know, and I had 22 wonderful years with the Globetrotters, and I'd like to thank Abe Saperstein. He's deceased now, and my teammates was made it a joy for me, and we played about, you know, 280 to 300 games a year.
I would also think it's difficult when you're traveling, when you're a human being, to be able to put a game face on. And in the case of the Globies, it was always a smile on their faces to bring a smile to those people that were watching you. How difficult was that night in and night out, given not only the tenor of the country at that time, but also just the demands of traveling?
Well, Ron, it was difficult for the traveling, but I love the game of basketball, too, and it brings people together, nations and countries together. So it made it sort of easy for us. You know, we could blend in with the families and the children. You know, children was a big part of our entertainment field. We would go out and do special things at different schools, and always say a positive attitude, you know, to keep a positive attitude, respect your parents as well as your coaches and teammates, and make intelligent decisions. And the most important thing was education, so we promoted that too. And also, Ron, I spent 11 years with the Orlando Magic when I retired from the Globetrotters in public relations, so I got a chance to spread some joy there with Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway.
Back in the early 60s, it was not a really enlightened time in this country. It was a socially changing time in this country. Did the Globies and yourself run into any of those problems as you were traveling around the country?
Yes, we did. We could eat at a lot of restaurants and hotels and stuff like that, but we still kept our heads hung high. And then after the middle of the 60s and the 70s, doors opened for us, so it was easier to get in and out of those things. But now it's the most peaceful world now, and I'm hoping those troops would continue their success, because we love those guys and hope welcome them back real soon.
Was it rather ironic for you and the other players to know that the same people who had an attitude that would not allow you to eat and sleep in some places were probably the same people that would come and applaud you when you were playing?
You're right about that, because sometimes we played before white audiences and we played before black audiences back in the 60s and 70s, but it came together, you know, in the middle of the 60s and 70s, so things started to turn out well, and I just enjoyed the game of basketball and entertaining people.
Did you have to adapt your game at that time, not you, but just the Globies in general, when you were playing in different parts of the country because of the social sensitivities?
Well, sometimes different countries' language barriers, but we could always get over because of the fun and antics of the Globetrotters. We would always keep a smile on their faces, and you need more laughter and joy in the world today, and we try to promote that, you know, within the new Globetrotters, too, of the recent area. So we just try to do the best we can and have fun while we're playing.
What was the first time, or when was the first time that you traveled outside the country, Curly?
My first year, 1963, after I got out of college, I was on the world tour. We went to Africa, Australia, Japan, Singapore, Hawaii, all through the over the world. So it was a great tour for me, because I hadn't been out of the United States really, but we had a chance to promote the Globetrotters and promote basketball as a whole with fun and entertainment.
When you did go out of the country, what was the most discernible thing that you noticed about the difference of playing basketball in the United States as compared to playing it someplace else?
Well, we put fun in the game. You know, it wasn't no fights, you know, whereas, you know, in the NBA, you know, we had a few things that didn't go well. But we always promote fun basketball and make sure the people was happy. And matter of fact, Ron, after the game, nobody really never knew the score, but everybody was happy and had a smile on their faces. And we signed more autographs than any other team in the universe.
One of the things that I do know about the Globies when they did play outside the country is they played on some unusual surfaces and in some unusual places. Can you tell me about some of those places?
Yes, we played in drain swimming pools. In fact, we played in the Bahamas on a soccer field. And matter of fact, in Madrid, Spain, and Barcelona, we played in the bull ring. So on tennis courts, you know, we would have our portable basketball court during the time when Abe Saperstein was the owner and originator of the team. We would take our portable basketball court and set it up, you know, in different surfaces, soccer fields and arenas, Olympic stadiums, and people would come out and have joy and fun. And we always had sellout crowds back in the 60s and 70s.
What about any stories of culture shock when you were traveling?
Well, it came with a lot of things. You know, a lot of times we go through with people didn't really understand the language barrier, but we let the basketball do the talking for us, and then afterwards they would invite us to their homes and, you know, treat us as a family and wanted to be more closer to us.
I don't know whether it was Meadowlark, and maybe you told me this story the last time you were with me, but you were playing in an Eastern Bloc country, and I think the game was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. And there was nobody there at 7:15, nobody there at 7:30, nobody there at 7:45, and then all of a sudden, a horde of people. Am I correct with this story?
You're right about that. Yes, it was back in, we just finished our European, not finished the tour, but we just left Italy, and the flights were delayed somehow, and we had a 7:45 game at in Wembley Stadium in England. So we didn't arrive to about 9 o'clock, and the people were there, about 18 to 20,000. Stood up when we were coming into the arena. We had one of our best games that we had, but we'd been out in airports, you know, waiting for the flight to come through. But as we walked in the arena with our suitcases and bags in our hands, they just gave us a standing ovation, and they really enjoyed it. They waited out the whole time for us, 2 hours late, but people just stood there and waited for us, and that was a a nice ovation for us and the Globetrotters.
We got about 45 seconds before we have to break. But Curly, I would assume you took the game outside the United States to some places that had never seen it before. What was the reaction? Did they understand the game of basketball?
Well, people didn't really understand in Africa and New Zealand and places like that. But we, like I said, we made the basketball talk and had fun, and we would mingle with people and became good friends with people all over the world, and they treated us just like family. So that was the most important thing about it. We were stood for the United States, and we wore the red, white, and blue uniform. So they treated us with fantastic joy.
Curly Neal has joined us here on Sports Byline. We're talking about the Harlem Globetrotters, one of the great sports institutions coming out of the United States. He played for 22 seasons and traveled all over the world, 6,000 games in 97 countries. We'll take a break, continue with more of you at America's Sports Talk Show.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Curly Neal is with us on Sports Byline. Curly, let's talk a little bit about your beginnings. You grew up in North Carolina. What was that like for a kid like yourself?
Well, you know, I grew up like in the ghetto and kind of difficult. You know, basketball, I started playing basketball because I wanted to stay out of trouble and it kept me away from hanging on the corners and the pool rooms and so forth. And I came from a one-parent family. You know, I was just there with my mom, and basketball gave me a joy of playing. And I just practiced till I became the best. And going through college, I got a scholarship. I had several scholarships going to college, but I chose Johnson C. Smith because I was my alumni friend, Mr. Vance Chavis, he got me to Johnson C. Smith because we went to the same church, and he didn't want me to get away and go to any other school, so I ended up going there to Johnson C. Smith and had a ball, and then I got those professional offers from the NBA teams and the Globetrotters, and that was the success of my life.
I understand you started playing basketball at the age of 11, but you really weren't very good at first. You said one time, when I was in the eighth grade at Lincoln Junior High, I was the last guy on our 15-man squad, and I got a lot of bench time.
I did. I got quite a lot of bench time. So I said to myself, you know, the next year I would practice over the summer, and then I went to high school in the ninth grade, and I ended up on the first team, ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and improved myself, and I haven't looked back since.
One of the distinctive things about you, Curly, has certainly always been your shaved head, and you started that at a pretty young age as well, did you not?
I started that at 12, Ron, and, you know, it was a fad in the neighborhood. We decided to do something mischievous. You know, my mom didn't really like it, you know, but I went through junior high school, college, and, I was back with Yul Brynner, and before all these guys, you know, started shaving their head. I wish I had put a patent on that, you know, before they could have got something out of it, but I enjoyed it, you know, and it was cheap anyway because I cut my own hair.
One of the things that I think is so wonderful about basketball, and I've talked to a lot of players that came out of your environment or played it in the inner city or down in North Carolina, is a sunny day or a warm evening. It's shirts against skins playing the game. Take me through what that was like playing on the playground.
Yes, it is. Matter of fact, I was a playground director too when I was in high school, you know, working with the kids and the playground was always open, and sometimes my mom would send my sister down there to get me off the basketball court 10, 11 o'clock at night because I was trying to be the best that I could be, and I didn't want to be getting into trouble, you know, with other guys who were doing wild things. So it took me a long ways, you know, throughout high school, too, and so I just enjoyed, you know, being there playing basketball, and They said, well, I would never, you know, as short as I was the shortest guy on the team, you know, when I joined the Globetrotters, but it doesn't make any difference how tall you are, as long as you can perfect whatever you want to try to do in life.
Two things that you did very well in basketball. One was the dribbling, and the other was the shooting. Let me talk about the dribbling for just a second. Where did that talent come from, and who helped you develop it? Who took you underneath their wing, Curly, to help you become the basketball player that you ultimately became?
Well, a guy by the name of Leon Hillard, he was from Chicago, Illinois. He helped me when I first came in with the Globetrotters, and my coach, Bobby Milton, went to Indiana State. You know, he helped me quite a bit. Metalock did a few things, too. He wasn't a dribbler. He was a showman. But I came as a basketball player, and the reason I started dribbling, one of the dribblers, the main dribbler, got hurt, so Abe Saperstein asked me, you know, would I try the dribbling routine. I said, sure, I'll give it a try. And I scarred up my knees trying to slide. You know, I played baseball. I knew how to slide the bases and so forth, but then being able to control the basketball, I just worked and perfected it. And, you know, like I said, we play every day, 7 days a week throughout the tour. So I just practiced. I would take a basketball in my room and break lampshades and so forth, but, you know, trying to perfect to be the best. And I just kept at it. And the next year I was number one dribbler for 21 years.
One of the things that people may not remember about you, you were one of the purest shooters to ever play the game. And I was surprised to see a stat. You never shot less than 50% from the floor, which means that you had quite an eye. Had you always been good as a shooter?
Yes, I practiced a lot. You know, even when I was in high school, my coach spent a lot of time after practice. You know, I would go out and shoot. And then during the off season, I was still practice shooting, you know, the three-point shot. They didn't have a three-point line during that time, but I was shooting from half court and so forth. But just a natural God-given talent. So I just tried to perfect it, and became one of the best shooters, like you said, 54%. And, you know, we didn't have that much time in playing the game, so I would always try to make my shots, and ended up shooting 54%, which is excellent for a ball player shooting from the range of a three-point line or 40, 50 feet out.
You know how much you could make if you shot 54% today, right?
Oh, yeah. Quite a bit. I averaged 23 points a game in college when I was with Johnson Lee Smith. So, you know, I was known as a scorer, you know, a shooter more so than the dribbler when I came out of college.
And you were also very good because I remember a couple games that I saw you. You could make them one after another from beyond half court, and that's not something somebody can do. Did you have a feel for that? I mean, what was it that allowed you to develop that capability?
Well, Ron, I just didn't like to miss. You know what I mean? I just like to put them in the hole. You know what I mean? And the more I practiced and the more I got better, you know, as I tell the young kids now to the elementary and middle schools, you know, you can be the best. Just go out and practice, and you'll perfect all that shooting and dribbling and so forth. But just practice, you know, shooting so many shots a day, and it just became a part of me. And then come game time, and, you know, I shoot 7 out of 8 with no problem.
You mentioned about your mom, and she was a housemaid. Your dad was a railroad worker. But I'm just wondering what your mother thought about this, because most mothers, I would think, would want their sons to go get an education, which you did do. But I would think that they would think that playing basketball for a living would be folly.
She enjoyed it. You know, we used to come to Greensboro to play at the Greensboro Coliseum, and she would come there with her high heel shoes on and pocketbook and so forth, sit on the front row and enjoyed it. They never really got a chance to see me in high school. They didn't come out that much. But when I was with the Globetrotters, they were there at every event when I came to the Globetrotters. As a matter of fact, Ron, I drop-kicked a couple of from half court, kicked the ball in the basket 2 or 3 times when I came to Greensboro and other cities. You know, I have a suitcase full of shoes, you know, Converse shoes used to wear back in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I kicked the ball in certain places, you know, L.A. and Metalock sometimes would make the hook shot. We'd back-to-back, and it was very enjoyable.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I do want to ask you about Abe Saperstein, because here was the man that started the Harlem Globetrotters in a very interesting kind of social combination between some very talented black basketball players and a Jewish businessman.
Wonderful man. He formed the Globetrotters. You know, he's from London, England, standing at 5'4". And he would always be a part of us, you know, on the road. He would come out overseas and give parties for us and so forth. And just to be, he would come out and coach, too, even though we had a coach during that time. But he would come out and sit on the bench with us. And we got a chance to meet his family, you know, Eloise, his daughter, and his son. You know, we met all of them as a family because we were based in Chicago, Illinois, during the 60s and 70s, practicing at DePaul University. So it was a family affair. Abe was a super man, and I love him for it.
What was his interest in basketball? Because, as you said, he was a British man. So what was his interest in the sport?
I guess he wanted to make entertainment and fun, you know, because, matter of fact, he tried to play himself, you know, but that height during that particular time. But he was just great for giving you the motivation and saying that, you know, we're the best. And he respected that as us as ball players more so than showmen.
Well, did the black ball players, were they surprised to see a man who was a white man treat everybody so nicely and so kindly?
No, it was all family, Ron. It was all family. It wasn't any, you know, derogatory things, you know.
Yeah, but that wasn't the way it was during that time, and I would think that that would be kind of an eye-opening thing in a positive way, by the way, Curly, is what I mean.
Yes, he was a nice man, you know, had a nice family, too, and we were like family, you know, and I now, you know, after playing so many years with the Globetrotters, I missed the first thing I missed my teammates, and I missed the fans, you know, for giving all that we gave to people around the world. So it was a treat for me just to be a part of the organization.
When you think back upon the legendary status of the Harlem Globetrotters, what is it you think that people who watched you guys play over the decades came away with when they watched you play in a game?
Fun and enjoyment. You know, Ron, now I'm 62 years old now, and I still get fan mail from people from all over the world. And I send them back pictures and just to say thanks for the memories, you know. But that's amazing just to me, you know, getting mail. The Globetrotters send me mail from fans, and I send them pictures back and so forth. And even in my tours, I go out and do positive attitudes for the kids. And I get a lot of hugs and kisses from the youngsters and even the older people. You know, they say just thanks for the memories. It's not like it used to be.
And speaking of memories, I'm sure you probably have many, but is there one moment in all your travels and of all the people that you met, both famous and just the regular person, that will always be ingrained in your mind?
Oh, so many people. Bill Cosby, Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip, the Pope, so many people that I can name. Even we met, I met three presidents, President Ford, President Reagan, Jimmy Carter, and Nancy Reagan. But it was, you know, they invited us to the White House, and just little moments like that mean so much, you know, to me and my other teammates from the Globetrotters. It was fantastic.
Curly, do you ever think what your life might have been like if you had not been a Globie?
Oh, I think it might have been, it would have been good either way, you know, but the Globetrotters gave me a chance to travel the world, you know, and spread joy and happiness throughout amongst families and nations, people, you know, and families as well, you know, just to be a part of that organization. It gave me so much knowledge and education, too, as a whole, and I do treasure it because it's been real special in my life.
Curly, I want to thank you very much. Good to catch up with you. Continued good health, and come back with us anytime on Sports Byline.
Well, nice talking to you, too, and I hope to see you maybe in the future, okay?
You got it. Curly Neal, the legendary former Harlem Globetrotter, and believe me, the Globies are something to be cherished in the American sports history. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.